A happy Tuesday. Welcome to Send It In, presented by BetMGM here on the BetMGM Network. I'm your host, PJ Glass. We got a great show for you guys coming up on the show today. We're going to continue our college football, our NFL previews. We're going to look at Nebraska out of the Big Ten today. We're also going to look at the New York Giants out of the NFC East. Our guy Nick Kenyon is going to join us middle of the show. We got two big golf tournaments coming up in Europe over the next couple of weeks. Scottish Open this week, and then the Open Championship, the year's final major, coming up next week. We'll get Nick's thoughts on that. Maybe an NFL thought from him as well. And then we will also, it is a teed up Tuesday, of course. B-Mills yesterday, you were asking us about the Scottish Open. Today, I'll give you guys four golfers that I like teeing it up out in Scotland this week, and then we'll give out our favorite bets of the day. As always, any questions, any comments, any best bets that you guys have for us, let us know. Hit us up at the BetMGM Network on Twitch, on YouTube, on X. And if you miss any part of the show, make sure you guys check out the Send It In podcast, which is available wherever you get your podcast. Let's get rolling. Glasses in session, and let's start with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Nebraska, obviously, by now we kind of have known the story with them the last 10, 15 years. The kings of losing those one-score games. Just every year feels like Nebraska is a game or two away from either winning 9 or 10 games or winning 4 or 5 games, and they usually are winning 4 or 5 games. But this year is so pivotal for Nebraska because it's year 3 of Matt Rhule. And usually under Matt Rhule, as a college coach, he has been unbelievable in year 3. You go back to his track record and what he did with Temple. In year 1, the Owls only won 2 games. Then in year 2, they went 6-6. Year 3, under Matt Rhule, Temple went 10-4. How about when he was with Baylor? In Waco, they only won 1 game his first year. They went 1-11. Then in year 2, 7-6. Year 3 with Baylor, took them to the Sugar Bowl. They went 10-2, 10-1 in the regular season. So now we're in year 3 in Nebraska. He's gone 5-7 his first year, 7-5 his second year. He's slowly been building up. They got off to a 4-1 start last year. Again, lost some tough games. They were up in the fourth quarter at Ohio State, up in the fourth quarter at Iowa, couldn't win some of these games. They finished the year with 7 wins. And now the win total is sitting at 7.5 for Nebraska. And I'm liking the over for the Cornhuskers this season. You do have to pay the juice at minus 145. But again, I'm buying in year 3 of Matt Rhule. I'm buying in on his track record. Forget what he did with the Carolina Panthers and kind of that disaster. What he's done as a college coach at Temple, at Baylor, the progression that we've seen year 1 to year 2 and then year 3, and kind of what it's been at Nebraska. Again, they easily could have won probably like 9 games last year. They're kind of on pace to do what he's been doing at his two previous stops. And he certainly got the quarterback to do it with this year in Dylan Raiola, who comes back for another season. Defense is not going to be as great probably on paper as it was last year. But since Matt Rhule's been in Lincoln, they have not given up more than 20 points per game on defense. I expect them to be really good on that side of the ball. Again, they have a veteran offensive line, 4 juniors and a senior coming back. Raiola, as I mentioned, as the quarterback. Skill position weapons, running back, wide receiver, that's going to be the question mark for Nebraska. They're going to need somebody to emerge, somebody to step up. But I like their roster. And more importantly, I like the schedule for Nebraska as well, right? If you're watching us on Twitch or you're watching us on YouTube or X, I mean, you guys can see the schedule for Nebraska, right? When you look at the schedule, what's the thing that jumps out? No Oregon, no Ohio State, no Indiana, and no Illinois. 4 teams that certainly should be towards the top of the Big Ten. They do get Michigan at home, which is going to be big, their first Big Ten game of the season. And then they also get Penn State on the road as well. Even though I think Penn State might be the most talented team in the Big Ten, keep in mind, again, Nebraska did go on the road to Ohio State last year. They were beating the Buckeyes on the road in the fourth quarter. And with the way that Nebraska plays and how they can muck it up and keep games ugly, that could be a tricky game for Penn State there in week 13 on November 22nd. But that opener against Cincinnati is going to be a big one. It's a neutral site game. It's going to be in Kansas City at Arrowhead. Should be a big Nebraska contingency. Should get a good home fan base for that one. Got to win that game, because if you win that, then after that, you're going to have Akron, Houston Christian. You're going to be 3-0 heading in to the Michigan game before the bye week. And that Michigan game is going to be so pivotal for Nebraska, because in their last 8 Big Ten home openers, they are 2-6 straight up and 1-7 against the spread. That's really been what has hurt Nebraska here in the last 8-10 years, is they have gotten off to slow starts in conference play. It's going to be really pivotal for the Nebraska Cornhuskers to get off to a good start this season. And they have a great opportunity to do that against Michigan and Bryce Underwood, who's going to be a freshman making his first career start on the road in front of nearly 100,000 people in a crazy, rocking environment. So if Nebraska's able to win that game, go 4-0, then you get the bye week. And out of the bye week, I mean, look at all the winnable games that they have, right? Michigan State, they're going to be favored in that game. At Maryland, they're going to be favored in that game. At Minnesota is going to be a tricky game. Minnesota's been a house of horrors for them here recently. They're 0-4. Four in their last 4 trips to Minneapolis, so that'll be a tough game, rivalry game, but they're probably going to be favored. If not, it's going to be like a coin flip, toss-up type game. Then they're going to be home against Northwestern, big favorites there. They're home against USC. That should be a win for them as well. You got new USC traveling to Lincoln in early November, especially if the weather is not great. That certainly favors Nebraska. Then they have to travel out to the Rose Bowl, take on UCLA. The tricky part about the USC and the UCLA game, both of those teams are going to be coming off bye weeks when they face Nebraska. So that is something that they're going to have to deal with. But certainly both those games are winnable. And then they get a bye week before they take on Penn State. So they're going to have 2 weeks to prepare for Penn State. And that game certainly could be massive, could have Big Ten implications potentially of who goes to Indianapolis for the championship game. And then, of course, as they always do, end the season against Iowa. And I mentioned how Nebraska has not been good on the road against Minnesota. Man, they haven't been good at home against Iowa. Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes have owned Nebraska here as of late in Lincoln. Nebraska 0-6 straight up and just 1-5 against the spread in their last 6 home games against Iowa. So, look, this is the story with Nebraska, right? Eventually, they're going to have to get over the hump. They're going to eventually have to win a lot of these close games that they've just been losing for the last decade. I think one of the top teams are probably going to end up winning the Big Ten. I think this is really a great year for Penn State to do it. Ohio State certainly could go and win the Big Ten for the first time in 5 years. Oregon obviously could go back-to-back. But if you are looking for a longer shot, if you're looking for the team that might be, I mean, nobody's going to be Indiana because they were like 300-1 last year to win the Big Ten. But if you're looking for kind of a middle-of-the-pack, kind of longer shot to win the Big Ten, I think Nebraska would be my pick at 40-1. The way that the schedule sets up for them, the fact that they don't have to play Ohio State, Oregon, Illinois, or Indiana. They get Michigan at home. They get Penn State off of a bye week. Every other game, they're probably going to be favored, or it's going to be, they're going to be a small underdog, or it could be a pick 'em type game. And then again, year 3 of Matt Rhule and what he's done at Temple and Baylor, how his teams get better. And usually year 3 is the culmination of all that progression and when it comes together. A lot of it's going to come down to Raiola, and he needs to be good this year for Nebraska. But if he is, I'm putting my faith in Matt Rhule. I like Nebraska over 7.5 wins. I'd look at them to win the Big Ten at 40-1 as well. Because again, if they get that win over Michigan, the fact they don't have to play Oregon and Ohio State, they could get some tiebreakers that could allow them to go to Indy, play for the Big Ten title game. So I like Nebraska quite a bit. Not going to pick too many long shots in a lot of these major conferences to win their conference championship. Nebraska is one of the teams that I would look at winning the Big Ten at 40-1. All right, let's talk some NFL now. Look at the New York Giants, who I don't think are going to have quite as good a year as Nebraska will this season. The Giants obviously supposed to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. Their win total is sitting at 5.5 this season. Over is plus 120. Under is minus 145 for the Giants. And for a team that is a last place team that should have on paper one of the easier schedules in the NFL, they have anything but that. Obviously, it does not help that they play in the NFC East, which means they're going to get the Eagles and the Commanders twice. It doesn't help the fact that they're going to get the NFC North this season. They got to play the Packers. They got to play the Lions, the Bears, and the Vikings. And then they also have to get the AFC West. You have to get 3 teams that made the playoffs last season in the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Chiefs. It's going to be a tough schedule for the Giants. Giants, and the start to their schedule is not easy. Right off the bat, they're going to have two division games right on the road, out at Washington, at Dallas. Then you come home and face Kansas City and the Chargers. Not going to be easy. Then that game against the Saints could be pivotal potentially for who gets the number one pick in the NFL draft. Might be a good idea to lose that game potentially. Then you get the Thursday nighter against the Eagles, and then they're at the Broncos. Then the middle of the schedule, they get all those NFC North teams, and then they close their schedule with the Vikings, the Raiders, and the Cowboys. Not an easy schedule for the Giants this season. I'm really not doing anything long-term with the Giants. I'm not betting their win total at 5.5, not taking a flyer on them to win the division at 28-1, not betting them to make the playoffs. A couple of ways that I would get involved with the Giants this season, I think betting them to get the number one overall pick might be a good look at plus 700, right? We all know Brian Daboll, Joe Shane, the GM, they're on the hot seat, both of those guys. And with the way that their season starts with those two divisional road games, the Chiefs and the Chargers, things could get ugly fast. Russell Wilson's kind of has his last chance here, it feels like, as a starter to prove himself. So this team is looking towards the future, and if things go south here quick, they're probably going to give Jackson Dart an opportunity second half of the season to see what they have in Jackson Dart, see if they can build around him and if he's their guy for the future. And if that happens, there's probably going to be a lot of growing pains, and the Giants are probably going to lose a lot of games in the second half of the season. I think you're getting a good number, plus 700, for them to finish with the worst record in the NFL. I know a lot of people like the Saints to finish with the worst record. I think the Giants are absolutely worth a bet. Outside of the defensive line, there's really not a lot to like with this team, and they're going to have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL. I think that's why, if I were to bet the Giants in any regard outside of betting them to have the worst record, I think they could be a good team to bet in the first quarter this season. When they're fresh, their defensive line is ready to go, they can keep them in games with their pass rush, their ability to stop the run, and with Russell Wilson as your quarterback at this stage in his career, Daboll, I think, is going to play things conservative, right? He's certainly going to look for opportunities to get Malik Nabers one-on-one, but he's going to want his quarterbacks, Russ is the starter, to limit the mistakes. He's going to want to lean on his defense, try and win games in the low 20s, maybe the high teens. That is the strength of his team, is his defense. Even though he's an offensive head coach, got to play to the strength. So the Giants, I think, could be a good bet this year as like a big underdog against the spread. I think they could be a big good bet early on in games, betting them in the first quarter against the spread. But as for like betting them long-term upside, bet the win total over, make the playoffs, want none of that. I kind of think the Giants might be the worst team in the NFL this season. The way that their roster is built, the way that they're approaching this season with two quarterbacks and Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, who are certainly past their prime, Jackson Dart, who they drafted in the first round, and kind of the way that their franchise is at, where the kind of the head coach and the GM have one foot out the door, you're kind of ready to move on from those guys. It just feels like ownership at this point is kind of waiting to see Jackson Dart, waiting to see if they have something with him at quarterback. So because of that, I would look to fade this Giants team. I like them fewest wins at plus 700, and I think they could be a good bet in the first quarter this upcoming season. All right, a promo from our friends at BetMGM. It's a Wimbledon's odds boost token. We got Carlos Alcaraz right now in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, and you can go for the ace on your next Wimbledon bet. Use this odds boost token to score a bigger payout if your bet hits. All right, let's get to our guy now, Nick Henion. We got a lot going on across the pond in the month of July. We got Wimbledon. We also got two big golf tournaments coming up over the next couple of weeks, including the Scottish Open this week at the Renaissance Club. So, Nick, they've played here the last 3 years or so. Tell us what to expect this week, teeing it up out in Scotland.
Yeah, hey PJ, it's actually been a little bit longer than that, but only 3 years ago is when it became the co-sanctioned event between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. You saw some of the top guys move over as a British Open tune-up, but not your typical par 70 here. 10 par 4s, 3 par 5s, 5 par 3s, but despite that fact, you really want to look at guys who are going to excel on the par 4s. If you look at the last three winners here, all have ranked T8 or better in the week for par 4 efficiency. Robert McIntyre led the field in that category last year. So par 4 efficiency, I know it's kind of treated as a British Open tune-up. It's not really your traditional links-style courses you're going to see next week at Royal Portrush. It's more of a bomber's paradise where you really want to focus your attention on guys who can hit it long off the tee and then excel with their irons into the greens. So got to hit a lot of greens to have success this week. It's looking like the weather is going to be pretty manageable, so looking like a little bit of a birdie fest. So got to look at guys who are good with the irons, are going to make a lot of birdies each week.
We're talking with our guy Nick Kenyon here on Send It In. Give Nick a follow on X at Nick Kenyon. Does great work. BetMGM senior writer, always putting out great golf content. Nick, you bring up Bobby Mack. He won the Scottish Open last year in his home country. The year before that, he nearly won as well, nearly beat Rory. He finished runner-up. And last time we saw Bobby Mack, he nearly won the U.S. Open at Oakmont. So he comes in good form, loves playing at this course, obviously going back home. What chances do you give Bobby Mack this week? Did you put him on your card?
I did not. The price left a little bit to be desired. And if you go back to last year, I think he was in the 40 to 45 to 1 range when he won at the Renaissance Club. Now you're seeing him around 25 to 1. So it makes sense given the course history. And as you mentioned, a really strong finish at Oakmont to potentially come close to a US Open victory. But in my experience, I think what I'm using this week for Bobby Mack is like, how do I want to play him next week? If he suddenly comes out and doesn't really play that well, let's say he finishes inside the top 25 but doesn't really contend, it might create a nice buy low opportunity next week at Portrush. But I just think from a price standpoint, it's too difficult to get involved when there are names further down the board who I think have just as much win equity, if not more, than McIntyre. And I think you're going to see a lot of people back him this week. And in my experience, usually the obvious answer isn't the right one, so I'm trying to get a little more creative. So I won't fault anyone who plays him because of the good course history, but not going to be on my card this week.
Well, who are some of those golfers that are down the board you think have some nice value next to their name that you like this week?
I'm going to start with Victor Hovland at 30-1. I know there's some lingering injury concerns with him. There might be a little bit of an issue with the neck, but if he tees it up this week, it tells me he's in really good shape and good to go. You mentioned Bobby Mack. Hovland's another guy who really performed well at the U.S. Open, tied for third that week, second in the field in strokes gained tee to green, third in the field in the strokes gained approach. That should really benefit him at the Renaissance Club. Over the last 24 rounds, second in strokes gained approach. He's also seventh in birdies or better gained over that time frame. And I know it's kind of weird with Hovland because he doesn't really have a good course history at this track, but he's been a really good Open Championship player before a missed cut at the Open last year. Three straight top 13 finishes at Open Championships in the three prior years. So Hovland at 30 to 1, excuse me, is going to lead off the card. And then we'll go down to Sam Burns at 35 to 1. He hasn't lost strokes gained putting since the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which is a feat in and of itself. But if you look at the areas where McIntyre excelled last year on his way to victory, they kind of coincide with where Burns has really strengthened his game over the last few months. So last year, McIntyre ranked fifth or better in par four efficiency, strokes gained tee to green, and strokes gained approach. Also, he wasn't a top five player in strokes gained putting, but he was top five in putting from 15 to 20 feet. Over the last 12 rounds, Burns isn't worse than 25th in any of those five measured stats. And he made a significant improvement in his last appearance here on debut, tied for 66th at the Scottish Open in 2023, a tie for 19th that year, second in the field in bogey avoidance, tied for third on par four efficiency. So Sam Burns, I think if he keeps the putter going well, I think you can see him contend here at the Renaissance Club.
I love it. Any long shots for you, Nick? Anybody way down the board, or are you just rolling with Hovland and Burns this week?
Just one, and I should mention that every winner here since 2018 has been 50 to 1 or lower, so be careful with your long shots this week. That being said, Rasmus Nygaard Peterson at 80 to 1 piques my interest a little bit. He's second over the last 12 rounds in strokes gained tee to green, seventh off the tee, fifth on approach, 16th around the green. The big problem is he's 151st in strokes gained putting, and he's lost over three strokes with a flat stick in his last three starts. But 12th at the U.S. Open, he gained 10.8 strokes tee to green at Oakmont. He also was plus 4.6 at the PGA Championship and plus 9.1 from tee to green at the Valspar. So I think if you just get an average putting week from him and the ball striking metrics continue, I think you could see him contend well above what the market suggests his final placement will be. So Rasmus Nygaard Pedersen was the only player outside the 50-1 range that kind of caught my eye. But it's definitely worth a flyer, I think.
All right, there you go. Three golfers to keep an eye on starting on Thursday at the Scottish Open. We're talking with Nick Kenyon here on Send It In. Nick, do you want to get a football thought from you? We're starting to preview all the NFL teams. Before we do, though, one more question about golf. We got the Open Championship coming up next week at Portrush. Rory going back home. Shane Lowry, the defending champion when they had it back there about 5 or 6 years ago. Any opening thoughts on the Open Championship? Any tickets that you have for that major coming up next week?
Yeah, I'm holding John Rahm at 17-1 from around the time the PGA Championship was going, and I do have a Sepp Straka 100-1 ticket from back in January after his first win on the tour calendar, so I don't really have a lot of faith in that. I like Rahm a little bit more, obviously, the short shot, but one name that's staring me in the face, I mean, Bryson at 18-1, is really kind of, I'm flirting with that a little bit. I don't know if I'm going to pull the trigger, but it was really only two majors ago we saw Bryson get steamed from 18-1 down to around 8 or 7.5-1 at the PGA. I know the Open is his weakest championship from a major standpoint, but he does have a top 10 a few years ago at the Open Championship, so maybe that experience comes in handy with him. I just think 18-1 for a guy who's been unquestionably a top three golfer amongst both the PGA Tour and LIV Golf over the last calendar year is just a little bit crazy. So the price is definitely tempting on Bryson, as well as potential plays. I'm looking at Hovland too for next week, along with, I know I hate to say it, Tommy Fleetwood and maybe Robert McIntyre, depending on how they play this week. But Bryson is the name that's really jumping out at me.
If you bet Tommy Fleetwood the week that he wins, you know, I mean, you can just always hold that to yourself, because that would be quite the feat if Tommy ever ends up winning. Nick, before we let you go, NFC East, we're looking for a repeat winner for the first time since 2004. Been 20-plus years. Do you think the Eagles finally do that? Do they go back-to-back the division, or do you like somebody else in the NFC East?
No, I'm not taking the Eagles. I really like the Cowboys to win the division this year. I think the prevailing thought for me is that there should not be as big of a gap in the market between where the market thinks Philly and Washington are compared to where Dallas is. If you look at Philly and Washington, look, there's a lot of one-score luck last year. Both teams won a majority of their games by under a touchdown or less. And the other prevailing thought is that both teams were among the five healthiest teams last year in terms of adjusted games lost. That's per FTNFantasy.com. Also, Dak Prescott did not play a single game last year against either the Commanders or Eagles. And say, we can make fun of Dak all we want when it comes to the playoffs, but he is one of the really good regular season quarterbacks. I love what they did bringing in George Pickens. I think the offensive line is going to be better. The defense took a step back last year, but I think there's sort of this island of misfit toys where I like Mike Zimmer better as a defensive coordinator than a head coach. And I think they still have really good talent on the defensive side of the ball. If you look at their schedule makeup, all of their difficult games come at home for Philly and Washington. They're all on the road. So I got Dallas back, I want to say it was in March or April, around 8-1 to win the NFC East. I just think there's so much negativity around this team next year, and I don't really like the Brian Schottenheimer hire, but I think that offense can be really good, assuming Dak Prescott stays healthy. So if the Eagles and the Commanders regress like I think they do, I think it opens the door for Dallas to win the division. In conjunction with that, I do have under 11.5 wins on the Eagles from a future standpoint. That's probably my favorite win total bet of the entire season next year.
Ooh, a lot of good stuff on the NFC East. We're going to preview the Cowboys tomorrow, and spoiler alert, I might be in lockstep with our guy Nick Kenyon on who's going to win the NFC East. Nick, have a great vacation, sir. Good luck on your golf bets this week. Next week at the Open Championship, we'll talk again to you when you get back.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, PJ.
Yes, sir. All right, guys, let's keep it rolling. Let's talk some golf. It is a Tee It Up Tuesday. We're at the Renaissance Club this week for the Genesis Scottish Open. This tournament has been tough to your boy. A couple years ago, we had Robert McIntyre, I believe, at like 65-1 on this show. He finishes runner-up. Rory beats him, birdies the last two holes to beat McIntyre. And then, of course, we weren't on him last year, and he ends up winning. So we're hoping that finally we can get a win at the Genesis Scottish Open. This year, I got four golfers that I like. It is a par 70 golf course, 7,282 yards, and it's a Scottish Links course, right? No water on the entire course. It obviously is off of the ocean, but no water on the course. Maybe you have to worry about if you drive your tee shot way left on 13, you got to do have to drive it over some trouble. But other than that, nothing to really worry about. The wind is really what's going to be the big storyline this week. This is one of those courses that the wind is the big defense. When it's really windy and it's humming and it's playing 25, 30 miles per hour, it becomes a really difficult course. If the conditions are benign, there's really not a lot going on, 5, 10 mile per hour winds, this is going to be a birdie fest, and you're going to see guys really, really go low on this course right now. And again, keep in mind, we are out in Scotland. The weather can flip on a dime just like that. But as of now, we are looking at some pretty moderate winds. They're calling for about 15 miles per hour for all 4 days. So usually whenever we go out and play in Europe, I'm always going to handicap these events. Like, I'm looking guys that can play in the wind. You know, I'll take my chances. If we end up having a tournament where we play 3 or 4 days where there's really not a lot of wind, then so be it. But generally, when you're out in Europe in July and you're playing the Scottish Open, the Open Championship, you're probably going to have to deal with conditions at some point in the event. And that's what I'm handicapping and I'm going into. So the four golfers that I like, we'll start with Rory at plus 900. Obviously won this event 2 years ago. Rory's been really good at this course, also had a top five finish last year as well. The concern about Rory is that before the U.S. Open, when we had the Canadian Open, he was awful. He missed the cut, didn't really look like he wanted to be out there. I'm thinking the motivation is going to be, though, is going to be there this week for Rory because of Portrush next week. He missed the cut when it was there last at the Open Championship. And obviously, this is his opportunity to win two majors in the same year. You know he wants to do it on his home country, on the course near where he grew up. So I think Rory's going to be dialed in. He's going to be focused. This is a course that really fits him well. He's one of the best players in the world when it gets windy. So as long as Rory comes to play, I think he wants to get his game in good form heading into Portrush. I like him at plus 900. Sam Burns, I totally agree with Nick. I like him at 35-1. Has not lost strokes putting, like Nick said, since the Waste Management. That was Super Bowl week, you guys. That was February. We're in July. Burns is the best putter in the world right now. He's a really good iron player. They're going to keep giving us Sam Burns at 35-1. I'm going to continue to bet it. How about Adam Scott at 45-1? Hasn't won since 2020, but the man's been getting close, and he was in the final group with Sam Burns at the U.S. Open, one of the best wind players in the world. If we start getting to 15, 20, 25 miles per hour, Scott should separate himself. I like him this week. And then how about Denny McCarthy at 100-1? One of the best short games in the world, one of the best putters in the world. Only played this course once and he missed the cut, which is why I think the odds are so good. But his last two starts, he's finished tied 12th, tied 11th. And again, you're looking for a guy who's great in the wind. Rory, Adam Scott, Denny McCarthy, probably the top three when it comes to playing in the wind. So I like Denny at 100-1 as well. All right, you guys, let's give out some best bets that we have for today. We will start with going streaking. Give me Francisco Lindor against the Orioles. And Brandon Young. Brandon Young has made three starts this season. He's given up three earned runs or more in all of those starts. The total is 10 today. And anytime I see a 10 at Camden Yards, that tells me that the numbers, the computers, the odds makers, they know something. This game's trending over. Should be a lot of offense. Lindor should be a part of that. So I'll take Francisco Lindor to get a base hit. Prop block, give me Taiwan Walker for the Phillies, under 11.5 outs at plus 125. He has not recorded 12 or more outs since May 30th, pretty much the entire month of June. Walker was coming out of the bullpen. Now they're trying to make him a starter once again. He had 2 2/3 innings in his last start. Going against this Giants lineup, though, are we really going to get 4 innings out of Walker? And we're getting plus 125 for him to go under, so I will take that. Nats is my dog of the day. Betting Davey Martinez. Betting on the Nats is Martinez's first game out of town, and then Mets Orioles over 10 runs is going to be my best bet of the day. Thanks again to Nick Kenyon for joining us. Cowboys and Michigan coming up on the show tomorrow. It's going to be a big one. We'll see you guys then.